Good morning, all. Welcome to this next panel. My name is John Keough. I'm a partner at Clyde & Co., a law firm based here in New York. I'm honored to moderate this next panel, which will cover regulatory and geopolitical developments affecting shipping. We have a distinguished and diverse group of panelists today from both the business and the government sectors to address this topic. And briefly, we'll cover 3 points. First, the regulatory developments and the challenges facing ship operators and owners and managers, including things like the ballast water management and air emissions standards. Secondly, we're going to cover the extraterritorial effect of U.S. sanctions, and particularly those involving Iran, and the effect on ship operators, investors, and insurers. And third, we're going to cover briefly some cybersecurity issues and geopolitical challenges generally facing operators and managers of vessels and insurers in the current environment. Now, you can see who the panelists are in more detail from their bios set forth in the program. But briefly, we have Minister Marios Dimitriadis of Cyprus, Minister of Transport, Captain John Mauger on the end from the U.S. Coast Guard, Mark O'Neill, who is the president of a ship owner and operator, and Clay Maitland, right next to me here.
I'm here.
Our own New York, yeah. Clay Maitland.
I knew you could do it. That's why I became a minister.
Mark, from a ship manager's perspective, sitting where you do at Columbia Ship Management, at the macro level, that high altitude level, you've been dealing with regulatory issues in managing vessels. Could you tell us your views on whether the adage, big is beautiful, really applies in dealing with this regulatory environment? And maybe comment on how you're dealing with ballast water management standards and air emission standards.
Thank you, John. We heard from the last panel, who briefly touched on the notion or the concept of big is beautiful. To the extent that big allows for greater economies of scale, efficiencies and efficacies, and allows a greater investment of resources and manpower, then I would have to say that the argument for big is beautiful is compelling, and that's certainly driving the present consolidation movement, both in on the owning side and on the management side, in the context of the intended Columbia-Marlow merger. But I think the challenge for all of us is to stay compelling and relevant in this industry. And from a ship manager's point of view, there's no doubt that many large owners can do things just as well and manage their fleets just as ably as we large ship managers are able to do. But so we have to stay compelling and we have to stay relevant and we have to take away some of the concerns on the regulatory and the geopolitical level from our clients and give those clients a dedicated, tailored service. So big is beautiful, but we need to stay focused on the client. We need to tailor our service for the client's needs and take away some of those concerns. But you know, we've had geopolitical concerns, we've had regulatory concerns ever since time started for shipping. Now is no different. I'm sure in the early 1900s, when some of the big conventions came in, owners and operators were complaining just as vehemently as they are now that there's too much regulation and the world is too uncertain a place. My son's studying history and politics, he reminded me that the world now is a calmer, more peaceful place than at any time in its history, which is quite startling, really, when one thinks about all the conflict and all the issues that are contained in our newspapers. But it's nothing new. We have to deal with it. We have to deal with it efficiently and effectively.
Thank you. Clay, from your perspective on the ship registry side, what is your view on the the environmental, the economic impact of these new regulations, including maybe say a word about the ballast water management issues.
Well, I hate to talk about ballast water. I'm going to leave that to Captain Morgan. But I think that that's a complicated question. We're a very diverse registry. There are a lot of different kinds of ships. The ships in our flag are maybe not typical of some other flag states in that they're rather new. The average age of a ship in the Marshall Islands flag is 8. A little bit unusual even today. The problem that we are seeing, which I am going to say a little bit about, and I hope I'm not ducking your question when I do this, because ballast water is complicated. Let me answer your question first. There are a number of things that are happening in the regulatory area that indicate that our industry and its, frankly, our trade associations within our industry have been less than fleet of foot or sure-footed, if you know what I mean, in adjusting to rapid regulatory change. And I think that if I were to characterize ballast water, the ship scrapping convention, for want of a better term, and some of the other regulatory costs that are now hitting the industry, some of which were briefly touched upon by the last panel up here, we are not really adjusting to the cost of all of these, including retrofitting. I don't think that the people in this room, many of whom are not experienced in running ships, and I certainly am not. I never sailed for a living. But they are not really aware of how big these regulatory costs are as a cost of entry. And I'm talking about the hedge funds. I'm talking about the KKRs of this world that are in shipping now in a big way and are facing, I hope they understand, that getting into the shipping business at whatever level is an expensive proposition. Regulation of shipping has made it more expensive. There's a lot more regulation, including, for example, ballast water management. It costs, the ticket of admission is a big one. It's a very high item in terms of cost. And BWM is only one of the regulatory burdens. Annex 6 of MARPOL is certainly another. In other words, emissions. Look at the cost of that. So from the registry's point of view, we're doing fine. But from the point of view of the investor, this is a little bit like building an office building in New York City. There are a lot of expenses involved in the regulatory side of the business. And you got to know that. I hope that's a coherent answer.
It's covered a number of points. Yeah. Minister Dimitriades, your perspective, please. You're the Minister of Transport of Cyprus. What is, from your perspective, What is the importance of these regulations? What are the conflicts in the regulatory framework that you see? And what is Cyprus doing?
Well, for a start, there's no doubt that regulation is increasing all the time. I mean, we see the pressure that is coming from the European Union, for example, for more regulation regarding environment. We do see a lot of different opinions of how regulation should be set. I mean, for example, in Cyprus, we believe that the IMO is the appropriate body to set all the regulations. And of course, in general, I think, and I will continue with what Clay said, there's no doubt that regulation has a cost. That's number one. Number two, there's no doubt that regulation is here to stay and it will increase. And number three, at some stage, we have to reach a balance between the introduction of new regulation and what the market realities are. And I think the ballast water management is a good example as well, and with what the technologies as well. I mean, we do see examples where we had regulation being introduced before the technology was ready for the introduction of those technologies, right, like ballast water management. So we need to reach basically a balance where regulation is introduced when it should be. Mm-hmm. So generally speaking, what we believe in Cyprus, generally speaking, is like there needs to be a fair competitive environment. So we do believe, for example, and we are part of the European Union, and of course this applies to registries that are from countries within the European Union, we believe that there should be a level playing field. So we're always struggling to convince our colleagues within the European Union, especially from the northern countries, that they are more sensitive. Well, we're all sensitive about environment, that basically we need to introduce regulations at a worldwide level and not at only a European Union level. And okay. I think sometimes what we see within the European Union is that the European Union is trying to drive new regulations and then sort of impose them on the IMO as well. So we need to reach basically a balance of these things. But there's no doubt that regulations will increase. There's no doubt that regulations have a cost. And I think that's where maybe more sizable operations, you have more economies of scale. It's what Mark said before.
Can I just come back on what some of what the ministers just said? I think it's time as an industry that we stop fighting regulation and resisting regulation and actually engaged in the process of regulation and embrace that in order to try and shape it to be more relevant to what we need, how we need it, when we need it, and in order to bring it in at the appropriate time. I think, along with many other industries, we spend too much time fighting regulation. There has been no more regulation over recent years. I'm coming at this from an ex-lawyer's point of view. There's been no extra regulation over the last few years than at any other time in the 20th century. So, you know, we are not in a new state. We're in a continuing state of evolution, and we have to embrace that and shape it. I think the problem is that we get taken by surprise too much and then have to catch up and put in measures to catch up, which are often more expensive than they need to be, than if we embraced and partook more in the whole process. So, for what it's worth.
Captain Mauger, you are the commanding officer of the U.S. Coast Guard's Marine Safety Office. Could you give us your view, your perspective on this regulatory framework and what you've been doing in particular with respect to air emission and these ballast standards, ballast water standards?
Sure, John, and thanks for letting me go last here in this discussion. I appreciate that. Good morning, everybody. I think that the previous panelists really hit on a lot of the same themes that the Coast Guard sees, looking out both at our shipbuilding or our shipping industry, but also the international shipping industry that trades here in the U.S. When we think about the geopolitical environment and the regulatory landscape, we see three main forces kind of shaping our work. First was something that the earlier panel talked about, and that's increased capacity, the desire to get more use out of the marine transportation system and the vessels. Second is the environmental regulation, which the panel's been talking about here already, and that's a desire by consumers, customers, stakeholders in this industry to have more sustainable shipping. And then the third force that's shaping the world that we work in here is this increased complexity. And it's really the tool by which we achieve both increased capacity while driving for a reduced environmental footprint. But it gets into issues like heavily automated ships and the impact on cyber systems, which we might get a chance to talk about in a few minutes. So I'm not going to touch on increased capacity. I think you all understand what that talks about, but I can hit on the environment for a minute, and particularly, you know, kind of what's going on with regard to ballast water and air and those things. First of all, pleased to hear that when I've been talking around the U.S. here lately, everybody assumes that there's going to be a lot of deregulation in the U.S., and everybody is offering up the regs that they want to see getting going, right? And I'm usually offering them up some, too. But I think in this case, you know, if we look at what's going on with environmental regulation, it's not a it's a broader stakeholder base that's pointing towards this reduced environmental footprint. And so I don't see these regulations going anywhere. In terms of how we have to deal with it, as the minister from Cyprus noted already, that the regulators, when it comes to environmental issues, it's unlike safety issues that we've dealt with previously. The regulators are out pushing a standard that's not technologically achievable yet. And that's really spurring the industry, spurring the development of technology to meet these goals. So it's a very different system. And in turn, the other problem that we have is that since the technology is not quite there, the operating practices aren't quite there, there's also a lot of market incentive to cheat. And I think if you look at the price differential between 0.1% fuel and 0.5% fuel or 0.1% fuel and 1% fuel in the recent ECA that we put in place here, there's a huge difference in those price differences. And so we need a different compliance mechanism. And I think along with what Columbia Ship Management, Mr. O'Neill here was saying, was that not only are we looking for the industry to be participatory in the regulatory process, but also really leading in increasing the level of transparency and the tools available so that we can monitor. We've gone from regulating accidental discharges to regulating waste streams. And so that if we put continuous monitoring of waste streams and make those available to compliance authorities, then we can really seek to get a more balanced and level implementation of these rules.
Coast Guard has just issued a new bulletin this month with respect to the installation of ballast water systems, management systems, and extensions. You want to comment briefly on that?
Sure. So everybody that's working in the U.S. with regard to ballast water management is aware that late last year, we type approved 3 ballast water management systems. I have another ballast water management system under review in my office right now. We have another 45 systems that have submitted letters of intent to seek Coast Guard type approval. When those systems will submit to us, I have no idea. But we have 3 approved, 1 in the process right now. And so if you remember what extensions were like before we had type approved systems, it was pretty much an easy pass in that you could request an extension on the basis that there were no type approved systems. Now that we have type approved systems on available for the market, we've had to change our extension policy and approach. So the announcement that we pushed out earlier this month talked about how that was going to change. And what we're really looking for here is we're really looking to have ship owners take a proactive role in evaluating, putting that technology and those operational practices on board their vessels that's going to work for them. And so there's some information that's out there. There's a sea of blue suits out there, but I come with my own gold stripes. I'm going to be around today. If anybody's got specific questions, please see me a little bit later on during the day, and I'll help you work through any specific questions that you have. But there's information out there for you guys to see. Thanks.
Thank you. Clay, the Baltic Index, where it is now, the demand for buying secondhand bulkers while prices are where they are. One concern that the vessel registries have are poorly maintained secondhand tonnage. Do you want to comment on that briefly, please?
I'm glad you asked that question. It's funny, you know, the last panel touched on this, and I didn't think they would, but John Wobensmith, for example, alluded to how we've squeezed every dollar out of operating costs in this industry. I'm talking about the ship owner. I'm not a ship owner, but the collective we. We focused on lowering operating expenses. Well, we have for about 8 or 9 years now, at least. And where we are now is we've got a lot of tonnage, some of it quite new. As people point out in this industry, and I'm sure the captain agrees with me, that it doesn't take very much for a well-maintained ship to begin to deteriorate. And it can deteriorate in small ways, or can it deteriorate in large ways. If it deteriorates in larger ways, even in small ways, Coast Guard is going to detain it, probably in New Orleans. The flag states are going to detain it with flag state detentions. I'm not going to regale you with the complex history and nature of how flag states themselves regulate tonnage. But two things happen, which I think are very important to this conference, because this is a ship finance group, ship finance conference. One is, and this is not always the most productive thing in the world, and it's something that we don't always like to admit, one of our objectives as flag states, be it Liberia, Marshall Islands, Panama, Cyprus, is to keep the bad tonnage out of our flag and make it go somewhere else. That's not a nice thing to say, but that's what happens, and it's been happening for years. If we can encourage scrapping, that's fine, but a great deal of the tonnage I'm talking about, secondhand tonnage, is in fact relatively young. And as we heard, there's a lot coming onto the secondhand market. In fact, there has been for a long time, and now, at least in the dry bulk sector, and I think we're going to see this in tankers if we're not already, this stuff is now marketable. And ship owners, particularly the smaller ones, are looking to unload tonnage and get some cash in the bank from the asset value that is increasing. Fine and dandy, but these ships have not necessarily always been lavishly maintained, and I'm not blaming anybody for this. It's a fact of life. What happens now? It's first of all, most of the responsible registries do not just simply accept ships for registration the way the state of New York will accept a reasonably new car for registration. It doesn't work that way for us. We have a very complex matrix which goes back to when Rear Admiral North, as he then was, and now he's retired, was running what we used to call M, in other words, the Marine Environmental and Inspection Branch of the U.S. Coast Guard, when he inaugurated and his colleagues a thing called Qualship 21. This has now migrated into the registries, and particularly the Marshall Islands, and there is a very complicated matrix by which we evaluate tonnage and owners. And it can be quite awkward when we say no. At the same time, flag states, open registries, call them what you will, didn't used to inspect their own tonnage. And to a large extent, we still don't. Most of it is assigned to the classification societies, ABS, Lloyd's Register, the major ones, hopefully, the IACS members. But more and more, the flag states are constrained to actually hire their own employed, not independent contractors, but real inspectors working for us full time. The result of this is that standards, this gets us to regulation, those ships, of course, are spectacular examples of derelict ships, but they make a very amusing picture. The problem is, except for the MOL ship, those are not depicting modern new ships. The modern new ships, many of them, are running afoul of this increasingly tight regulatory flag state / port state standard.
Minister Dimitriadis, would you comment on the Cyprus position of secondhand tonnage concern?
Well, I agree with Clay. I mean, most of the registries, especially the registries with good reputations like the some of the ones that they have been mentioned, we do maintain a high quality of tonnage. And of course, we have a number of methods of doing that. It's through the classification societies, through the network of independent ship inspectors, and through inspections we actually do through our regional offices. So, I do believe that, especially with the new regulations coming in as well, at the end of the day, this will be a counterbalance from the availability of second-hand tonnage. And I do remember that last year, a lot of people, they were arguing that all these regulations that are being introduced, they will act in basically leading a lot of these ships into scrap. But maybe if they, as I heard in the previous panel, if there's so much increase in demand, some of these will have to go somewhere. I don't know. Just to say something very fast about the regulation, I do believe that just a point that Mark mentioned. I do believe that what we need is not to fight regulation, but what we need to do, and I'm talking as a regulator now, we need more consultation with the stakeholders. And this is a discussion we had with some of my fellow ministers within the European Union, and we're trying to do that through the Council of Ministers starting from next week in Malta, where we're going to have a council, where we're going to have listen to the views of all the stakeholders, and I think this is definitely something needed.
John, can I just add a word? I'm not sure I understand the relevance of this topic just discussed insofar as a poorly operated ship was always a poorly operated ship. I don't think it matters the relevant time is irrelevant in that sense. It's always been the case. So if a vessel is being operated with any of the panel members that you had last time, that will be hopefully a well-maintained, well-operated vessel. There will always be poor operators out there, irrespective of the time, irrespective of the regulation, and that's the industry we face. So I don't particularly see a change in that as a basic paradigm.
Thank you. Mark, could you comment now on your view on the sanctions issue we're addressing, the extraterritorial effect of the U.S. sanctions, particularly those on Iran? Do you see those as a trap for the unwary in operating and managing vessels? Your comments on that.
Yeah. Up until Saturday night, when my daughter had her 18th birthday, this was the only thing that kept me awake at night. So if I look as though I'm a rabbit caught in the headlights, it's because I'm just recovering from the 18th party, which was a true eye-opener. The sanction situation does keep me awake at night, and the reason is simple. Up until perhaps the last year, we always looked, certainly from a legal point of view, we always looked at sanctions as far as applicability concerns. Is US sanctions applicable, or EU sanctions applicable, or UN sanctions applicable? And we saw that certainly in relation to Iran, there was an extraterritoriality of the US jurisdiction creeping in. We had recently a situation where the vessel, the shipper, the cargo interests, the receiver, and indeed the cargo were all EU, UN sanction compliant. And therefore, on the face of it, the trade was a permitted one. However, the receiver under US sanctions fell under the SDN list, so was a prohibited receiver. Now, what you have here, therefore, is a trade and a business that, for all intents and purposes, is entirely lawful, except for U.S. persons, which might fall at any stage, at any point in that entire business. And in this case, it was the reinsurance market. So we were informed that this particular trade, from a reinsurance market point of view, was potentially in breach of sanctions, and therefore, if the vessel continued with that trade, she would proceed uninsured. That concerns me, because I would have expected the insurance market to respond to that and to provide an element of reinsurance in Europe or elsewhere that falls outside of the more extensive US sanction framework. So I think what is of concern is that every ship operator, every ship manager, everyone involved in this maritime adventure must now accept the fact that US sanctions apply universally to every bit of business, if and to the extent the reinsurance market, and the insurance market, reinsurance primarily, is primarily located in the US. And that's an important eye-opener. Do not proceed on the basis that you are EU, UN, and whatever other sanction compliant if you haven't checked the entire structure of the enterprise and the particular shipment concerned. So that does concern me. And there isn't an obvious answer at the moment.
Thank you. Last topic we can cover here, we just have a moment, cybersecurity issues on board vessels. Captain Mauger, do you care to comment very briefly on that?
Yeah, thanks, John. So as I talked about before, increase in complexity, increase in automation of vessels brings with it some risks associated with cyber. There's been a lot of movement, or there's been some good movement in this space already. We have an industry association, BIMCO, that's put out their cyber guidelines. There's some discussions going on over at the International Maritime Organization. And certainly here in the U.S., we already have the authorities, and we have the plan in place to deal with cyber issues here in the industry. What I would say very quickly is that, first of all, cyber is not just cybersecurity to us. It's also cyber safety or cyber risk management. And in that context, it's something that, just like any other risks that you as a owner-operator are managing, this is going to be one that you have to manage as well. And so that we think that it fits within the context of the existing management plans that you already build to address safety and security issues within your operation. Cyber is just another one of those elements that you're going to have to deal with. Thanks.
Could I add one thing, Mark, before we close? I think that this panel and a lot of other panels are going to touch on, and that is the speed of technological change in our industry. When I got involved in this business 40 or 50 years ago, it was a very traditional, hidebound industry, somewhat old-fashioned. The whole nature of what a ship is has changed a great deal in the last 40 years, and it's changing much more rapidly. We are now facing the real possibility, and this is very controversial, but I believe it to be the case, maybe because I'm an old fuddy-duddy, I think we're going to see the self-driving ship, or at least the very highly automated ship, with very small human crewing in terms of headcount, much sooner than other people think. And that is going to, when you talk about the regulatory process, that is going to move us very, very rapidly into a whole new, you know, we won't be, they say, from The Wizard of Oz, we're not going to be in Kansas anymore, Toto.
I would support what Clay says there. It's interesting, actually, in taking up the present role and as future CEO of the Columbia-Marlow merger, it's perhaps indicative that I'm also CEO of a company called Blue Dynamics, which is a bespoke software company of 50 programmers doing nothing else but exactly what Clay said, blue sky thinking, writing programs for better efficiencies and efficacies. And I think if we ignore that, we ignore it to our peril. It's a hugely important part of our business going forward.
Great. We're out of time. I'd like everybody to thank the panel. I'm sure if you have questions, please corner one of these gentlemen afterwards. Thank you very much.
Thank you.